DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops at DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I said as well that we were going to speak to a former deputy commissioner of the NYPD. He is with me, retired NYPD deputy commissioner James O'Keefe. He is vice provost of St. John's University, New York as well. James, good to see you. Thanks a million for
coming in to us.
Maura Butler's with us, a lawyer, former chairperson of the Association for Criminal Justice Research and Development, and Catherine Norton, the psychologist. You're all very, very welcome.
Thank you very much for coming in to us.
James, I'm curious about the kind of the experience in the States post-COVID of crime and antisocial behaviour, and whether it is increased or whether its visibility is increased or both.
Well, you phrased that question actually very good. Post-pandemic, most crime is down, according to UCR data in New York City. Most people don't feel safe, though, and they don't believe that crime is down, and that's because disorder is up. And so what people see in the street is a lot of disorder, a lot of antisocial behavior. But most of the crime data is down. Now, there are exceptions. There are neighborhoods in New York City. There are neighborhoods in Chicago where they have spikes. And the police departments in those cities are very well equipped to handle those spikes and deal with them. But I think a primary challenge today is disorder and migration and disobedience and demonstrations and those kinds of things.
And is that more a feature of the post-COVID world than it was pre-COVID?
Yes, absolutely.
And why
there's been a significant change in the border policy in America. The border has been open for 3.5 years now. And just to give you an example, we have somewhere around 90 to 100,000 migrants in New York City, more arriving every day. And the challenge for that is that New York City and New York State are what we call sanctuary cities. So the city is obligated to provide them with housing and food. And there's not enough housing and there's not enough food. So it creates a lot of challenges because although our compassion is not limited, our resources are. So we build in makeshift tent cities for people, and there's been disturbances in those cities. That coupled with the Israel and Hamas war is leading to massive demonstrations on our college campuses. And although demonstrations in themselves are not a problem, and certainly we admire the First Amendment right, they're starting to get a little out of control, and they're taking over buildings, and they're harassing certain students. So those things are all coming together to create a real sense of disorder, because homelessness and all that goes with that.
Have those demonstrations, have they kind of spilled out of those university campuses onto the streets? Would you believe I was in New York actually on October 7th last year, and there were demonstrations kind of in Times Square, as you'd imagine, immediately afterwards. Is that still happening on any scale?
Not now, although universities are opening up next week, and there's every expectation that it's going to resume again.
Okay.
But we had a little bit of a lull during the summer.
What about drug use and things like fentanyl, which we hear an awful lot about in the context of the States? How much does that kind of play into all of this?
It's an enormous challenge. Fentanyl, thousands of Americans die constantly from fentanyl poisoning. We see people living in the streets, walking around under the influence of drugs. They just now we're starting to see something called carfentanil, which is almost like 90 times more powerful than fentanyl. Its primary use was to sedate elephants. We now see that on the streets in New York. So the fentanyl, the drug epidemic, just adds to the sense of disorder because we see people walking around the streets under the influence of drugs, half-dressed. There was an article in the paper today that they've pretty much taken over a whole section of Penn Station. Mm. So collectively, that all creates a feeling of not the city not being safe, even though the crime data doesn't necessarily show an increase.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's echoes, isn't there, to conversations, sorry, that have been had in this country as well about kind of perceptions in kind of city centres and towns as well to a degree. And listen, whether that is reality or not is sometimes beside the point, because for people on an individual basis, perception is reality.
Absolutely. Also, I think what's important is negative memories are stored for much longer and, you know, deeper than a positive memory. So, you know, if we only hear of one negative story, it will stand out in your mind. Plus, the brain's job is to protect the host. Yes. And so, let's face it, as individuals, if we hear of a threat, we're going to look out and listen to it. And I think, you know, the false media feeds into this. We're having a big problem with that over here at the moment.
Yeah, yes.
But I think, you know, I'm glad that you actually mentioned about the famine tour. Like, I just think, you know, you're walking along there and thinking the contribution, you know, of Irish people to America, and, you know, the advantages of diversity and so forth. But I think there's a lot of fear at the moment, and a lot of fear regarding maybe some of the negativity that we actually hear, and not actually, you know, focusing on all of the positives of the immigration.
In terms of dealing with it, I mean, it strikes me, like any problem, that there's ways you deal with the symptom and there's ways you deal with the cause, James. Like, I mean, in terms of dealing with the symptom, like, is it more visible policing on the street? Is that the kind of the simple thing to do? Is it, you know, because I'm not sure how you're kind of going to deal with some of the causes of this.
Yeah. Well, you know, often law enforcement and policing runs into government and politics. And I don't know that policing is the answer to these kinds of things. I think these are public policy decisions that are being made. And the police do the best they can. And the mayors and governors do the best they can. But we're just not built to get that kind of number of people coming all at once. For example, last year, it cost the city of New York an unexpected $5 billion to deal with this. And the projections of that next year is going to cost $10 billion. That's unexpected expenses for the city of New York and some resentment bills, because other people are saying, well, you could be using that money to build the schools or to help me. So that's where some of the resentment isn't necessarily nationality or race based. It's limited resources that people are fighting for. And $5 billion is a lot of money.
I agree with that. I think that's a similar problem that we have here. I think the Irish people are very, very welcoming. But I think the difficulty is, if you actually see them struggling for, you know, additional help for those with autism and so on and so forth, and we're not seeing it, and, you know, difficulty with elderly people, and then all of a sudden you're hearing that, oh, we have all of these individuals coming in. We doubt actually having any clarity as to, okay, where are we going to place them? And, you know, how are they going to get through mainstream school if we can't actually facilitate those, you know, with neurodiversity difficulties.
Exactly.
So I think it's a lack of information sometimes that causes the fear, and then the fear causes, you know, further fear, and then onto the rights and so forth, because people are actually feeling threatened. Yeah. I think a little bit more communication, and and I think if the government, and again, I would never go into politics, ever, ever, ever would I go into politics for all the money in the world. I think my husband would be delighted to hear that, but I just think communication for children, communication in marriage, communication right across the way, and especially with governments. If we have open and transparent and honest communication, then you're not going to see so many difficulties, to be honest, with, you know, difficulties hearing about hotels being burnt down. I mean, if you're hearing about a large amount of people moving into a very small community, which I read there recently in the paper, somewhere in Tipperary, I think it was in Nina.
Yeah, Dundrum, near Nina, Dundrum. Yeah.
Where a larger amount of people were going to be coming into a very, very small community. Now, I mean, in all fairness, they may have been very, very welcoming, but, like, I grew up down the middle of the country, one little shop, one little church and so forth, and to hear all of a sudden all of these people are going to come in without any clarification as to where are they going to go to school? Is there language barriers?
Yeah.
And more importantly, I suppose, as a psychologist, I would be concerned about, are there mental health difficulties? How are we going to be able to help these individuals when we're already seeing such a struggle in Ireland with our own mental health difficulties and not enough resources?
Yeah, because more like it's so interesting, the similarities, because what we've experienced here is that there's undoubtedly people for whom it is to do with the colour of the skin. You know, there are people out there who are just quite simply racist. You know what I mean? Let's call a spade a spade. And what they seek to do is they exploit then the kind of quote-unquote genuine concerns that people have, and Catherine touched on this, it might be about places for your kid in kind of special school or the lack of an autism unit down in the local national school. It might be the wait for the GP, housing, kind of the original sin of housing from all else flows in this country at the moment, it feels. And all of those things are kind of exploited. And I heard somebody put it kind of angry about all the right things, but with all the wrong people, you know, and instead of becoming angry with the policy makers or with the people who decided to house X amount of migrants kind of in a hotel in Dundrum when there's almost nothing else in the village, you get angry with the migrants.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, and there's a huge job of work to be done by policymakers. I completely concur with what's been said already insofar as the statistics in Ireland similarly do not justify the kind of fear that's available. I leave to Catherine now to judge the psychology of how people became fearful in their own lives because of pandemic and lockdown and the authoritarianism that was necessary during that lockdown period. And I think almost in a way, there's a bit of a backlash in society. We've got an element of anarchy in relation to how people live their lives and the sense that we've been locked up for a while because of the pandemic. So now let's just get out there and say whatever it is we want to say and hang the consequences. The policy piece is such that you got to look at the big picture. Whereas it's awfully easy to say bad people should be incarcerated because they do certain things that we shouldn't necessarily take on board, that they may have trauma in their lives. It is very necessary that we actually look at the perpetrators of crime and the victims of crime not quite an homogenous group, but very, very much related. And it's very necessary to ensure that we get a balance in that regard. And policymakers have a big job of work to do because you've got to provide the resources. So let's, for example, talk about policing, given that we were talking about policing a moment ago. Like, there's a lot required from our police force. I was very, very impressed as to how much they leaned in during the COVID pandemic, when they had the resources, when there was a reduction in crime of all sorts of other levels, burglaries, etc. And they dealt with potential domestic violence issues at a time when those victims were more at risk. So that was a very good moment in which we could see that where policymakers made the resources available to our police force who were doing the leaning in piece, which is part of their duty. Part of their duty is crime prevention. And sometimes we forget about the prevention piece and we forget about the trauma that people who get involved in crime have.
Yeah.
And we just look at the results of it.
See, this is the drawback. Democracy doesn't work. This is the drawback of kind of policymakers being politicians a lot of the time, isn't it? Because, and I appreciate the point, Catherine, you'll never run for office. You never have any interest in being a politician. You want to be a politician. There's more votes in being tough on crime than talking about kind of intergenerational trauma.
What does that achieve?
That's my point. I'm in complete agreement with you. But this is where, when it comes to setting policy, there's always... You know, there's always that attraction from a politician's point of view to tough on crime policy rather than the, as you say, let's think about this kind of more homogeneously.
There are really good Scandinavian examples where they have actually not allowed their politicians, excuse me now for not having chapter and verse on this, right? But they do not allow politicians, particularly in that pre-election phase, to use crime as part of their toolkit when they're actually going for election. It's actually a no-go area. And there's a lot to be recommended there because what you'll find in criminological terms is that folks will actually move from a right-wing agenda to a more liberal agenda. And we've had some fantastic success in Ireland in that respect. But then they recycle it all again and start off as though it's something new.
There's a text in here from Paddy in Termon Fechan who says policing as a... Actually, Termon Fechan is kind of effectively translated as sanctuary city. Doesn't it in Irish?
Isn't that
there
lovely?
You are. So Paddy in Termon Fechan, policing, as I said before, you should just watch Netflix's Flint Town, Ohio. 98 cops policing 100,000 people with 10 cars. It's policies and it's orchestrated. That's Paddy's view anyway, having watched Flint Town on Netflix. The issue of resourcing as well, because what we've seen is since kind of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and then kind of the spin-off protests around that as well, James, was that policing and the funding of police departments became this huge political football as well, and then got kind of consumed by the culture wars, like yes. So many things do.
Post George Floyd, policing changed enormously. Suddenly it became defund the police, demoralize the police. I saw cases of dehumanizing the police. Those effects are still in place. Every big city police department is still having trouble recruiting people to come into the police service because people just don't want to do it anymore. So it was terribly unfair. And I don't mean to minimize what happened. There was absolutely no reason for that. But we still suffer from the effects of the George Floyd incident.
And is it still the political football it was a couple of years ago? Like, how much is it being talked about in the current election cycle?
The George Floyd incident in itself is not, but there is still a great deal of talk about defunding police.
Okay.
They defunded the NYPD at one point by $1 billion. And the logic is that if you defund and take the money from the police, you can put it into social services. Somehow that never works. Somehow the money disappears from the police department, and I don't know where it goes.
But it doesn't go into social service and dealing with some of the problems that you set out there, Maura. Catherine, to kind of bring back in COVID for a moment, because and it's a point that Maura brought up. I'm conscious. I remember in COVID, people said we'd never go back. It would kind of change everything forever. And I always thought that was a bit of hyperbole. And it's amazing how we kind of all snapped back to our lives as they were. But the more time goes on and the more we deal with kind of some of these issues, the more I think actually there was a hidden impact that maybe I didn't appreciate, certainly at the time. And I think that's what's lingered. Is that fair?
I think
kind of
so.
A psychological impact for some.
And I think it's been very, very quick that all of a sudden, I mean, the COVID is just finished. And then all of a sudden we have this big influx of people, which is great. As I said, you know, diversity is always a good thing. But, you know, we haven't had time to assimilate. We're just out of the COVID. And then all of a sudden, you know, here we are in contrast where we're all out and about again without any time. The brain needs time to adapt. And further, I just want to add on that point. I'm seeing through the prison services, and I think this is a little bit of a concern, a number of Gardaí are leaving the guards and going to work in the prisons.
Yes.
And I don't think that's good for us either. So maybe that's, I always think that when we look at America.
And why, they just, because it's a similar line of work, so they're kind of, they're trained, they feel, and what, it's just an easier job, they think?
I think they
it's
see it as an easier job. Like, I'm the mother of a paramedic, and I see as well that, you know, and I don't want to criticise my child, but I see that my own child is becoming somewhat desensitised, you know, by the amount of mental health difficulties. And to be honest, I wouldn't like to be the mother of a Garda at the moment. You know, they go out and, yes, they have their baton and they have their spray and so forth. But with the rise of knife crime and the amount of mental health difficulties, you don't really know what your child is going out to. And I think it might be safer for them, ironically, to work in a prison setting. And I think that might be a driving force for, I'm just seeing it, you know, going into the prisons and hearing that this guy used to be a member of An Garda and now here he is working in the, I don't want to say which prison. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's getting overlooked, I think, here.
There is the potential, though, that we may actually return to a form of community policing in this country. We have new legislation which has just been signed off for community policing. And I think to go back to your point in relation to the visibility of police in the street, we don't have that no more. I mean, for quite a long time now, folks are careering around Ireland at enormous speed on the roadways. And when's the last time you saw a Garda check? For example, So we the policing isn't as visible, and when you find in a small town on a city street, you have police officers walking up and down. That is a deterrent, just the very presence of them. And I'm hopeful that the new community policing legislation may bring us back to some degree to that. And I think when police people, when the Gardaí have actually got people in their neighbourhood who are working in collaboration with them, in relation to crime prevention. I think that marriage is a much better one than to see our police as being authoritarian types who are actually going to, you know, charge us with some offence or other. if you're in it together for the better of society, it's a big ask.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that we lost that community's feeling about An Garda. And it's not in the same way as it's happening in New York. There's almost like this invisible divide now, a barrier between the society and the people whom they police. Yes. And I think the loss of that positive relationship is injurious to both society and policing. Do you think so, Jim?
I absolutely agree, especially in cities like New York where the neighborhoods are so distinct. Community policing is essential because if you put an officer in the same neighborhood, they get to know the people that live there, that work there. They know who belongs. They don't know who doesn't belong. I wouldn't attempt any kind of policing in America, certainly, without getting a strong community policing base in place. Because you can't police people that don't know you.
Well, we've only kind of skimmed the surface, I think, of what you could all add to this conversation. It's been really, really interesting, but kind of time is against us, I'm afraid. So thank you all for joining me.
And thank you very much, too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.